got my bags packed and on a roll. I'm heading out there and I'm ready to go. I'm looking real good in my passport photo.
Amateur Traveler, episode 443. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about the city that never sleeps, the Big Apple, the city so nice they named it twice, New York City. Join us while travel and New York City expert Pauline Frommer tells us about her hometown. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. We have two new sponsorships, I think, starting both next week. But this episode of the Amateur Traveler is again sponsored by BloggerBridge. If you're a company that's looking to connect with content creators like bloggers, videographers, and of course, podcasters, BloggerBridge can help you out. Check out bloggerbridge.com. It is my great pleasure to welcome back to the show Pauline Frommer, the editorial director of Frommer's, who has come to talk to us about her beloved New York City. Pauline, welcome back to the show.
Oh, well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. And it is my beloved New York City. I'm one of the few who was born here and who never left.
I thought you were born there. That was interesting. That was one of the questions I was going to ask. And congratulations now on being back in charge of Frommer's. I know that it has belonged to other people, or the name got sold years ago and is now controlled again by the Frommer's family. So that's exciting. We'll talk about that a little more at the end.
Sure.
But let's talk about New York. I normally ask the question, why should someone go to New York City? I feel silly asking that about New York City. But what would your answer be to that question?
Well, we New Yorkers have never been known for our humility. So I guess the answer would be that you haven't lived until you've come to New York City. As I say in the book I wrote, which is Frommer's Easy Guide to New York City, we just have more and more here. We have the Western Hemisphere's best museums. The Metropolitan Museum is the largest in this hemisphere. We have extraordinary chefs from all corners of the globe. We're the center for culture, dance, theater, many types of music. I won't try and get into a debate about jazz or pop music. Other cities may hold that crown, but for many types of music, I think we're still king. Outdoor spaces. New York has more green space than any other city in the United States. A lot of people don't realize that. And the people here, we get a bad rap. People think that we're not friendly. And I've always found that to be the opposite of the truth. None of us drive, or very few drive. I've never owned a car in my life. And so we're out on the streets. We're used to talking to people. And I've found people who I've met who have come here have been really surprised at how friendly we are. Plus, when you overhear things in restaurants here, it's guaranteed to be fascinating because we have such a mix of people from all over the world, people who are really ambitious and often at the top of their careers. So it's the best place in the world to eavesdrop.
Well, and not a bad place for celebrity sighting either, I should say, based on my personal experience in New York. Probably there in Hollywood would be the two places.
I live on the same block as Alec Baldwin, of all people.
I've had breakfast with Alec, although, well, he was at the next table, but yeah.
So whenever there are news crews on my block, I think, oh gosh, what did he do now?
Now, let's take a one-week itinerary in New York. You can't see everything in a week, obviously. But what would you recommend for someone who's coming, let's say for the first time, to New York City?
Well, the thing that people don't realize about New York is it is spread out if you take into account the boroughs, and in a week you definitely should. So you got to create an itinerary that makes sense geographically. So you just don't want to spend all your time getting from place to place. And you really want to use the subway. I know a lot of people are scared of it, but it makes a lot of sense. The great thing about New York for visitors is almost all of the main part of the city where tourists go, Manhattan, is on a grid system.
Right.
So it's actually really easy to find out where you're going. I mean, the uptown trains go uptown. The downtown ones go downtown. It's not that difficult.
Well, and it's even easy to tell just from the street numbers as you go north and south how far it is.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's because not only is it a grid system, but each block is exactly the same in length. Mm-hmm. And when they created the city, they were worried that this would make the city kind of staid and boring, and the opposite has happened. Each block, even though it's exactly the same size as the next one, has such a different character one to the next. Mm-hmm. Somehow imposing this rigid system on the city allowed creativity to flourish in other ways.
And I'm going to sound like not a New Yorker when I say this, but I want to say that north and south from the streets, not the avenues, then it is 10 blocks to the mile.
20 blocks to the mile.
20 blocks to the mile. That's what I couldn't remember whether it was 10 or 20. Okay.
Yeah, it's 20 blocks to the mile. In fact, my rule of thumb is if anything is less than 20 blocks, I just walk. Because right. It's going to be faster than taking a subway or the bus or a taxi. But anyway, back to your first question. How should you plan an itinerary if you're a first-time visitor? Well, you're going to want to see the top sites. And I think you should. There are reasons why these are iconic sites. The site that is getting the most play right now is the 9/11 Museum.
Sure.
And I have to say, it is a wonder. It took a heck of a long time for them to create it. A lot of us who lived here never thought it would get built. And mm-hmm. I think because they had so many interest groups that they had to deal with, that I was very surprised when I visited it that it wasn't at all watered down. That it really, you walk into this museum and you go down, down, down into underground. But as you go underground, you actually see the steps that the survivors walk down to escape the burning building. And you're brought immediately back to that day. They have voices and radio broadcasts going. You just see so many artifacts from the time. You learn about these individual acts of heroism and, of course, infamous acts as well. You see bizarre things like a brick from the Abbottabad complex where they killed bin Laden. I mean, they tell 20 different stories in really compelling ways. When I went there, I walked in thinking, okay, I'll review this. I'll be out in 2 hours. I left 5 hours later.
Well, the whole project was a complicated one, too, because it's both a memorial and prime New York real estate that they wanted to redevelop. And trying to balance the two was a tricky thing to do. I mean, I certainly understand why it took so long in some ways.
Yeah, no, the whole thing was a very tricky enterprise. The one mistake I think they made is we Americans, when we go someplace, we turn right automatically because that's the side of the road we drive on. But really, the museum starts on the left, and that's where the story is told. And then on the right is more of the memorial section.
Okay.
And so you really need to get the story before you get the full impact of the memorial. And unfortunately, most people are seeing it backwards. So that's my big piece of advice. Go left, even though everything in your heart is telling you to go right. You want to do that in the morning.
Okay. I was going to say, are there logistics we'd need for that? Okay.
And you need to get advanced reservations. That's one of the things you really do need to get advanced tickets for because it does sell out. First of all, you're going to want to run across the street. There's a really good food mall that has only New York restaurants in it. So no chains. And the best barbecue in New York City is there. So you dash over, you grab some ribs, and then you head over to the ferry dock terminal so that you can spend the day downtown in the financial district.
Okay.
And you head to either the Statue of Liberty.
Mm-hmm.
You do that if you have gotten tickets to go all the way up to the crown. Those two are really, really limited, but it's a great thing to do because you get to see the inside structure, which was built by Gustav Eiffel of the Eiffel Tower. It's just an amazing thing to see. If you don't get those tickets, I would say see the statue from afar. You don't get that much by going onto the island. And instead, stay on the ferry so you can go to Ellis Island, which is where everybody who came into the United States through New York for a good, what, I think 30 years had to pass. In fact,
I think it was a little longer than that even, from when they replaced Castle Clinton, which is, I think, where my family came through, if I have the dates right.
Historians say that it's the place of the largest human migration in history, this one small spot. And the museum there is remarkable and also very moving, and I think tells you a lot about what made New York great, which is our immigrants. You're going to probably spend the afternoon there. And then, if you still have any energy left, get a great dinner and see a show or go to a comedy club or go out for some music. And then on the second day, I guess you go back downtown.
Well, before we do the second day, you had us seeing a show.
Yeah.
I suspect you know some tips there that I don't. I mean, we all know about the half price ticket booth, but that takes some time to wait in, or we've done advance tickets. Or are there any other suggestions in terms of, obviously the hottest show is going to be tough to see. The older shows are going to be easier to get a ticket for.
Yeah.
What do you recommend for people?
The dirty little secret about Broadway is that 70% of the shows are always discounted.
Sure, yeah.
Unless you want to see the Book of Mormon or Beautiful, which are, I think, the two hottest shows right now, you're probably going to be able to do it at a discount. And you don't have to wait in that darn line and waste vacation time. You go to such websites as Playbill.com, as BroadwayBox.com, as TheaterMania.com, and they all have discount codes.
Excellent.
But you want to see a good show. And this advice is controversial, but I think that shows should have an expiration date on them, like milk. Because if you see a show that has been running 10 years and a lot of the same people are in it, you're going to be seeing Night of the Living Dead a lot. I saw Chicago. My niece was in town, desperately wanted to see it. It was so clear that the chorus people in it had been doing it for so long. They were like zombies. They were so obviously bored, and everything that made the show great was gone. I hate to hit just Chicago because it's a problem with many shows. I just don't go back to them. And it's partially because the first cast gets to rehearse with the director. I used to be an actor, so I know this.
I recall you were in musical theaters, I recall.
Yeah, I did Les Mis on the road for a long time. The second cast gets put in by the director, but the third cast is told, basically, they're trying to save money at that point, and they're told to simply copy everything that the last cast did. And there are very talented people up there, but that's a rough thing to be asked to do as a creative person. And I think it leads to very wooden performances. So you want to see newer things, and you don't want to just go to Broadway. There are amazing shows off-Broadway, off-off-Broadway. So look and see what the good reviews are.
Well, and we should also say that depending on what time of year there are other opportunities that may be available. For instance, I did Shakespeare in the Park when I was there last time. Now, it was on a very hot, muggy day, so standing in line for tickets was not the highlight of my day.
Yeah.
But it was a wonderful performance.
Do you know there's a lottery?
I did not know there was a lottery.
Yeah, there's a lottery online for Shakespeare in the Park. So next time, if you're going to be here for a couple of days, before you wait on that line, just enter every morning. And if you don't get it for the first 3 days and then you're leaving the fifth day, then wait on that line the fourth day.
Excellent. Any other seasonal things like that that would replace or augment our night out experience?
Oh, so many. I mean, if you're here around Christmas, which is, of course, a top time to be in New York, it's also very pricey.
Right.
There's the Sing-Along Messiah.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm.
Which everybody grabs their books and sings with the Philharmonic Orchestra and incredible opera singers. There's the Nutcracker, of course. In the summer, there's all kinds of festivals. There's the New York Fringe Theater Festival. There are movie festivals. You just pick up any local paper and you'll see two dozen happenings. Pretty much, I mean, and there's always talks going on here. That's the thing about New York. We're the center of media. So people know if they have an idea they want to push or a book they want to get some traction for, they have to push it in New York, and they do it with talks. And so you are going to see the most incredible things. Like at the recent New Yorker talks, they got Edward Snowden by Skype, I believe, to talk to the crowd in an auditorium in New York City. Yeah, and then they get Hillary Clinton. They'll get all kinds of boldface names are speaking every single week in New York City. And that can be as exciting as going to the theater or the ballet.
Excellent. And then you were hitting us off on our second day here.
Okay. Since you have a whole week, I'm going to keep you downtown for the second day.
Although, okay.
Because you have to remember, when you look at Manhattan, the city grew uptown. It started right. In the financial district. And you're going to see the most remarkable sights down there. In my book, Frommer's Easy Guide to New York City, I have a walking tour that takes you past the spot where George Washington took the first oath as the first president mm-hmm. of the United States, and another spot where the Puerto Rican Liberation Army tried to blow up what had been Francis Tavern. Why did they hit that? Because Francis, who was a big figure in the colonial war and the Revolutionary War, was from the Caribbean. Hmm. I'll take you past the Federal Reserve, which is actually the spot in the United States where the most gold is, much more than Fort Knox. And this is another one. It's absolutely fascinating to see, but you have to apply 6 weeks in advance because they do a background check.
I would think they would.
You want to go in there, but it's really worth seeing. And they let you touch a gold bar. They don't let you bring anything in, not even a pad of paper and a pencil. They have their own shooting range where the guards practice inside this building. But the most gold in the world is there. And it's an absolutely fascinating thing to see. So you're going to spend the morning wandering around the financial district. You're going to zip up to Chinatown for a dim sum lunch.
Okay. And not everybody may know dim sum, but we're talking about where you sit there while the waiters bring around all the trays and you order things. I was going to say in courses, but it's even a little less than that, little plates at a time. The last time I did dim sum, though, in Chinatown, none of the waiters spoke English and I didn't know how much I was paying.
But it was probably less than $15, right?
It turned out to be very cheap.
You don't have to worry about how much you're paying. Each plate is usually about $1.50 or $2. Mm-hmm. It's hard to overspend in Chinatown. And then from Chinatown, you'll go to the Lower East Side so you can continue the story you started the day before when you went to Ellis Island and learned about
immigrants. And you're taking us to the Tenement Museum.
Taking you to the Tenement Museum.
I have not made it yet.
Oh, you have to. Mm-hmm. So many museums around the world tell us about the lives of the rich and famous. Mm-hmm. This is a much more moving story, I think. It's a tenement through which tens of thousands of new immigrants moved through the century and a half that it was in use as a tenement building. And then through a quirk of fate, it got shut down and perfectly preserved for a good 40 years before the museum took it over. And they take you into, you get to choose which family you're going to follow. For example, there was one family that lived on the Lower East Side, Jewish immigrants from Eastern Europe who made their living doing tailoring work in their homes. We all know about the sweatshops.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But as common was piecework, people who had to turn their own homes into sweatshops and do a hell of a lot of sewing to stay afloat. And you learn the story of this man who one day walked out of this tenement and never returned. And it's a mystery. His family was left bereft. They don't know what happened to him. And then two generations later, his great-grandson went to work in the World Trade Center and never returned. So you hear these incredible stories. That's just one. You can follow other families. I hope I didn't give away too much. And then stay downtown that night because, quite honestly, the best food is downtown.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Away from the touristy places in the center in Midtown, for instance, especially.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Midtown has a smattering of very good but very pricey places to eat. And the cheap food in Midtown is really usually just geared towards tourists.
See, I would have thought maybe Hell's Kitchen, though, for instance, or one of those more collection of... Okay, excellent.
Sorry.
You are on here because you know more about the city than I do. So excellent. So downtown.
stay downtown. You can have a fascinating, really delicious meal. The thing about downtown, the East Village, the Lower East Side, mm-hmm. Greenwich Village, these are the areas, and Brooklyn, to be frank, Brooklyn has become a hotbed for mm-hmm. fine cuisine. These are the places where the sous chefs of all the famous New York chefs start their first restaurants. And so you pay less than you would at a place helmed by somebody who's constantly on the Cooking Channel or the Food Network. But you get food that is as creative and as lovingly created, I guess.
Do you have a new favorite or two in that area?
Oh, my goodness. There's so many. I went to a place recently called Skal, S-K-A-L, mm-hmm. and it was Icelandic cuisine.
Okay.
And it was absolutely spectacularly delicious. Some things that might scare people, like there was a salad with a dressing of pig's blood. But it was really delicious. And they also had less frightening food, but very interesting, herby tastes. A very unique cuisine that unless you've been to Iceland, you probably haven't tried.
I would say I was just in Iceland and I did not have a salad with pig's blood, so.
Well, you haven't lived then. You got to come back to New York. In Brooklyn, there's this great little restaurant called Shalom Japan. And it's a Japanese chef and a Jewish chef who got together and mixed their two cuisines. And the results are amazing. Like the best ramen soup with matzo balls. Really delicious sushi that also has smoked salmon and horseradish. Just really interesting flavor combinations that are perfectly done. Just so many interesting places to see and eat. So you stay downtown for dinner, and then maybe you go to one of our iconic jazz clubs if you like jazz. Mm. There's so many great places downtown to hear music. Or if you're more into rock and roll and you want to see a new band, it's also a great area for that.
Any recommendations for a jazz club?
The Village Vanguard.
Okay.
It's cramped, but it looks exactly like it did in the 1950s, and that's where the real aficionados go. They have a really expert person curating the lineup, and he knows who all the up-and-coming talents are. And it also gets some big names, too, who play there just because it's such a historic place.
Excellent.
Third day, make it your Midtown day. Start the morning at the Empire State Building. Okay. You want to get there as quickly as you can, first thing in the morning, because the lines there can be atrocious. Mm-hmm. This may be the case. There is something called the City Pass, which I like better. I like it better than the other passes that are out there, because a lot of passes will say you can go to these 42 places and you're going to save $150 if you do that. Well, who's going to go to 42 places? The City Pass only gets you into 7 places. But if you go to all 7, and you likely will, because they're the places everybody wants to go, like the Empire State Building, mm-hmm. and you get to jump the line with the pass, which is really great, like the Metropolitan Museum, like the Museum of Modern Art. These are the places that are on everybody's list.
Sure.
So, as opposed to, there are some passes that you buy them, and then you think, okay, I got to make this pay off. I guess I'll go to the Museum of Torture. I wasn't planning on it. Actually, there isn't a Museum of Torture in New York, but that's, you get the point. So you go to the Empire State Building, because looking down from there, I think, gives you the best idea of what the city looks like and will really mm-hmm. help you figure out your way around. It's just a fascinating place to be. I know other people prefer Top of the Rock, which is better because you get timed tickets. So you don't have to deal with lines.
Sure.
But there's something nostalgic about the Empire State Building.
Well, and I will have to say, speaking of nostalgia, I also love the Empire State Building at twilight.
Yes.
Just as the sun is setting and the whole city is colored gold below you is just a beautiful, beautiful sight.
But it's also, that's probably a pretty crowded time to go.
Well, I actually find that a lot of the crowds have lessened a little bit by that time of day, but I'm not sure. I wouldn't swear to that.
Might have been lucky.
I might have been lucky. That's why I say, as I have less experience there. So,
yeah. Now,
you mentioned two of my favorite New York museums with the City Pass. You mentioned the Metropolitan Museum of Art, which is probably my favorite art museum in the world.
Mine too. Absolutely.
I don't know that everybody realizes that. I would compare it with the Prado. I would compare it with the Louvre. I think it is not just a great collection, but it's just a wonderfully presented museum. And, of course, as you said, huge. But it is just a wonderful museum that I would definitely say don't miss. But I also do enjoy the Modern Art Museum.
I don't enjoy it as much.
I don't enjoy it as much, but I liked the Design Center. And I was there when one of their rotating collections was a very wonderful collection by photographers post-World War II. That, of course, is going to be hit and miss. But yeah, I would rank those very specifically, and yeah. I would rank them higher than the Guggenheim, for instance.
Well, the Guggenheim, the Guggenheim is hit or miss.
Yeah.
The Guggenheim...
wonderful building. Fabulous. Wasn't impressed with the collection.
The collection is pretty small.
Mm-hmm.
It really depends on what they're programming. And they've had some wonderful shows. They had a show about the Mayans with Mayan art that was really spectacular. They had another show about Harley Davidson and the art it's inspired. And I know that sounds silly, but it was a great show. But I think it really depends on what it's showing because its collection is fairly small. The Whitney, too, can be really great, but it's moving. It's going to be near the High Line.
Oh, interesting.
It's going to be, it's actually closed right now. It's closed, I think, until they're saying the new one will reopen in late spring. Fingers crossed it will. It'd be very interesting to see what happens with that.
Well, and since we're talking art museums, I have to ask you, if you're only there for a week, would you recommend somebody make the trek all the way up to see the Cloisters Museum?
Yeah, if you have a full week, and by a full week, I mean 7 days.
Okay, so we're talking about the portion of the Met that is located in Canada, is what it feels like. I mean, it's way the heck north in the city.
Yeah, it's pretty far in, it's in Upper Manhattan, but especially for people who have never been to Europe, the myth is that it was airlifted. It looks like a cloister. It's called the Cloisters. It looks like part of a monastery. Actually, it's pieces from different cloisters all over Europe, but so seamlessly and perfectly combined with such exquisite works of art, like the famous unicorn tapestries, that I think it's very definitely worth seeing, especially if you've never been to Europe. This is really a way where you can pretend that you've crossed the pond and do it darn effectively.
And I would recommend if you do it, you don't do what I do. You check to see the days that it's open before you travel all the way up there.
Yeah. Well, luckily, the Metropolitan is now open 7 days a week. The
Excellent.
Cloisters is not, but the Met is.
So you were at the Empire State Building with our City Pass.
Empire State Building, you walk uptown and you see all the fun shops on Fifth Avenue. Mm-hmm. You visit Rockefeller Center, which is a marvel of architecture. There's an incredible book about how it came to be built during the Depression. At the height of the Depression is when it was under construction, and I think it kept something like 5% of New York City's population had jobs at Rockefeller Center building during the height of the Depression.
And you can tour the TV studios there if you're so inclined.
They're actually closed right now.
Oh, is that right? Okay, interesting.
Yeah, they're reconstructing a lot of NBC, so you can't do that. But I've done that tour. I find it kind of a big commercial for NBC.
Well, what a surprise.
Sometimes it's interesting. It really depends on what you see, and that varies in terms of what's being taped. I prefer the Radio City Music Hall.
Sure.
Which, because it's such a great work of architecture, and you get to take your picture taken with a Rockette, and you get to quiz her about her life. And I got a really good Rockette on my tour, but it was fascinating.
And I'm assuming that almost everybody who's listening knows what a Rockette is, but describe a Rockette to those who may not.
Well, in the famous Christmas show, these are the women who are all between the heights of 5'5" and 5'7", who dance together in perfect unison and have done so since the 1930s, when a guy named something Rock, I can't remember his name right, but that's where they got the name from, was the founder of the Rockettes.
And we should say these are not the same dancers from the 1930s, because I don't think they could do those high kicks.
And they're probably no longer 5'5" to 5'7". They would have shrunk by now. So you walk along Fifth Avenue, you see all the shops, you dip into St. Patrick's Cathedral, you tour Rockefeller Center, and then you just go hang out in Central Park, unless it's crazy cold. Central Park was created in an area that looks nothing like the park does today. Basically, every inch of dirt was trucked in from New Jersey. Every hill was created. It's a totally created, manufactured space. Mm-hmm. And the point of it was to create an outlet. They were worried that there was going to be class warfare in New York. And there had been some riots, big ones, especially around the Civil War, before the park was built. And so it was supposed to be a pressure valve for the city. And I think it worked. And you see, and they specifically chose different parts of the park to serve different functions. One part is supposed to be for the high and mighty to parade in their finery. And it's filled with statuary and these incredible big trees. Another part, the dairy, was an actual dairy when it first opened, where poor children were supposed to get their milk. Another part was a parade ground for the military to parade on. Another part was meant to look like a forest. And you go in and the trees are all crowded together and you feel like you're in a forest. You can't see the buildings around you anymore. And it was the United States' first great park. And many parks around the U.S. were based on it. So if you come from another city with a big park in the middle, I think it might be fascinating for you to see where the landscape architects who planned yours probably got a lot of their ideas.
Excellent. And you mentioned the big riots during the Civil War. And as I recall, that was largely because the rich people didn't have to be drafted. If you paid a certain amount of money, you could hire somebody to take your place. So that is the sort of thing that can lead to class warfare. So
that's correct. So, gosh, I can't believe we're still on day number three. Okay. day number four, you spend the entire morning at the Metropolitan Museum and maybe the entire afternoon too, if you have the stamina. You do a docent tour.
Yes.
They really are very well trained and erudite and fun. And then you either do another museum, perhaps the Museum of Natural History, which is a very different museum.
Especially if you have kids, I would say.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Or you go to the Cathedral of St. John the Divine, which is the largest cathedral in the world. That's because St. Paul's in Rome is not actually a cathedral, and it's not yet finished. They're trying to build it using medieval techniques. So not only do you get to see this great work of architecture, but you also get to see it being built and learn about that, which is fascinating. And then you head up to Harlem for a great dinner to see the sights of Harlem. Harlem is a fascinating place, a place of a lot of history. I have a good walking tour in my book, The Frommer's Easy Guide to New York City, for that.
Well, and this is probably an appropriate place to ask. Some people don't go to New York City because they still think of it from back in the 80s, especially, as being unsafe. And you just told us to go to Harlem. And so there are people wondering why they should do that.
Well, New York City was ranked by the FBI as the safest large city in the United States.
I wanted you to have a chance to say that.
Yeah, so you really don't have to be worried about being in New York. I've been much more nervous in other cities. Mm-hmm. I grew up here in the 1970s. And back then, yeah, I would carry mugger money to school just so I'd have something to give them. But you don't have to do that anymore. And it's a very safe city, and Harlem is very safe. In fact, when I was renovating my apartment, I lived there for 8 months. And it's an incredibly friendly, open, interesting place. What I loved about living up there is I was constantly surrounded by music, because there are all of these little storefront churches up there, and they have services every day of the week. And you hear the music pouring forth, and it's really a very special experience to see Harlem.
Well, and when we talk about neighborhoods, I gathered you lived from, you were mentioning Alec Baldwin, I was gathering you were in the Upper West Side.
Nope.
Oh, okay, so he's moved. Okay.
I live in Greenwich Village.
Oh, okay, so further south, okay.
Yeah, I'm very lucky. after all this time in Manhattan, you hit the boroughs. You go to Brooklyn. There are, as I said earlier, incredible restaurants mm-hmm. in Brooklyn. The Brooklyn Museum has probably the best Egyptology collection in the world. In really? Fact, when a new piece of Egyptian artifacts come up for sale, they're often asked if they're Brooklyn Museum quality. Hmm. The Brooklyn Museum is a wonder and also has some spectacular modern art. They have Judy Chicago's dinner party. They have Rodin sculptures. They have a lot to see and do. And right nearby is the beautiful Botanical Gardens. So mm-hmm. you can spend some time indoors and some time out. There's the Brooklyn Promenade. There's just lots to see and do in Brooklyn, also a very historic area. It was the first area of the city to be landmarked by the Historic Landmarks Commission. So you spend that day in Brooklyn, and then maybe your last day, I think we're on our last day, in Queens. Because Queens gets overlooked. Mm-hmm. It too has some remarkable sights. If you're traveling with kids, you've got to take them to the Museum of the Moving Image. This is a museum all about TV and film and video games from the point of view of how they're created. So it's incredibly interactive. You go from booth to booth and you can say, you can dub your voice over Audrey Hepburn's in My Fair Lady, and you can re-edit a famous piece of tape, and you can learn how video games are made and play classic video games like Ms. Pac-Man and Paperboy and all those ones from our youth.
Yes, well, I remember those.
Yeah. And it's just an amazing place. And nearby, Queens has, I think, the only metro system that has been declared a national landmark. It's the number 7 train. And because it goes through something like, I think it's 53 ethnic communities, the federal government declared it a national landmark. And you can wander through neighborhoods where for 5 blocks, everything is from India. And you see sari shops and Indian restaurants and Hindu newspaper stands. And then 2 blocks later, everything is from the Czech Republic. And then 4 blocks later, everything is from Senegal. And you can literally see the world by wandering around Queens.
Excellent. Although I would have to correct you, I believe there are at least 2 other national landmarks that are trolley systems. One is the cable cars in San Francisco, and the other is the St. Charles Street Line in New Orleans.
Okay. All right. But for different reasons.
But you got me on the other ones, though. So.
Right. So and so you have a great ethnic dinner down there. Maybe you go to a Greek restaurant in a place where they actually still break dishes, or you go to the Bohemian Beer Garden, which is amazing Czech food served Excellent. Outdoors with oompa bands playing. Mm-hmm.
We mentioned a little bit when we were talking about the Upper West Side, the Lower East Side, Greenwich Village. We mentioned all these different neighborhoods, and for me, I didn't fall in love with New York until I realized it was a city of neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. Do you have some neighborhoods that you really think people ought to see that they maybe have never even heard of?
I'm a downtowner, mm-hmm. so I love the Lower East Side. I love the East Village. A lot of people don't think of the East Village, but if you want to go shopping, that's where all of the...
That's where you can really afford things, you're saying, versus Fifth Avenue.
But it's also not going to be chain stores. Mm-hmm. It's going to be designers who have come to New York to try and make it big and have opened their little storefront. And you can find unique clothing that you're not going to find anywhere else in the East Village, especially on 7th, 9th, and 10th Streets, going far east, like east of 2nd Avenue. So those are areas, as I said before, hanging out in Queens. Many parts of Queens are just fascinating. Not necessarily beautiful architecture, but the people who live there. One of the best ways to explore Queens is with the Big Apple Greeters program.
That's
a program where native New Yorkers who just love to meet visitors give free tours. Mm-hmm. And I took a tour of one area of Queens with a young man who was of Dominican descent. And he took me into shops where all that was sold were different saint statues and medallions and potions. And it was half folk medicine and half Catholic icons. And then he showed me a house where he knew that 12 families were living in this tiny house, mm-hmm. and told me about what was going on behind the doors of places that I never would have known about otherwise.
Excellent. In terms of when did it go to New York, my understanding of the busiest times would be Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, and summer. What do you recommend?
The worst times in terms of hotel rates, mm-hmm. are September, October, November somewhat.
Really?
December. Yeah, people come somewhat for Thanksgiving. Actually, the worst weekend of the year is when the New York Marathon happens.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that
that's when prices go crazy. They also go crazy during Comic-Con.
Sure.
The convention. So you got to look at when the conventions are, and that's the downside to visiting New York. Mm-hmm. I have to say, as a guidebook writer, wanting to share my love of the city and wanting to find ways for people to do it, I'm disheartened by how crazy hotel rates are. And they literally are insane.
And has that changed at all? When you were last on, we talked about budget travel options, and I know some of the ones you recommended then aren't as good options anymore. But what are your tricks these days?
It's gotten worse and worse and worse. Mm-hmm. My tricks are, make a reservation at a place that will allow you to cancel without, mm-hmm. a penalty, and then try and remake the reservation the night before. Or if you can do it, if it's a place that will let you cancel the day of, mm-hmm. there's a really great app called Hotel Tonight.
Sure.
And you can sometimes get great prices through that. Consider staying in Queens. The nice thing about staying in Queens is you're right on the subway line. There are interesting ethnic communities there, as I said, and the prices are much lower, usually, than they are in Manhattan. The thing about Manhattan is you can spend $400 a night for a hovel or
yeah.
a place that is just crazy, tiny, not well maintained, and it's because I think this year we're on track to get 54 million visitors,
right.
which means that the hotels of Manhattan have something like a 90% average occupancy rate. In other parts of the country, a hotel is doing really, really well when it has a 65% occupancy rate.
Right.
So hotels here charge whatever they can, and they get away with it. So that's the negative.
Right. So basically make friends who live in New York and have a spare room is really what we're recommending.
Yeah. I mean, and unfortunately, Airbnb is illegal here. And
right.
I haven't heard of anybody getting caught except for some apartment owners. I haven't heard mm-hmm. of any tourists getting stung, but there's always the chance you could. So it's rough.
You mentioned one other park that we just glanced over because we said something about it's that one of the museums was locating near the High Line.
Yeah.
I love the High Line, but yeah. I'm not sure that everybody has heard of it.
The High Line was an abandoned elevated railway track that only very intrepid people used to climb up the trestles to, and it was covered with weeds and wildflowers. And they decided to make a park of it. And like Central Park, it too is influencing park building all over the world. They've created this glorious park,
right.
about three stories up. And you get to see the city from a different angle when you're up there. And they based a lot of its looks on what it looked like when it was wild.
Mm-hmm.
So they kept some of the same weeds. And they just opened up the last section of it.
Oh, did they? The northern section.
Yeah, that happened about 2 weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
So it's a great time to go.
And so that takes it up as far as what, like 40th or thereabouts?
It's in the upper 30s now.
Okay. I knew it was south of 42nd Street, but I wasn't sure exactly how far it got close to there.
Yeah, and it's dotted with cute little outlets of other New York restaurants where you can grab food, a drink, wander around. I remember one of my most magical nights was a friend was visiting me from out of town. We decided to walk on the High Line, and in a building opposite the High Line, three jazz musicians just decided to stand on their fire escape and play for the crowd.
Excellent.
They couldn't make any money because there was no way we could get the money to them. They just did it for the joy of music, and it was absolutely magical. And that's what's so great about New York. That type of kismet happens all the time.
Excellent. Now, we talked a little bit about food, and I still haven't gotten over the pig's blood salad dressing, but if we wanted to have more of a quintessential New York experience, is there one thing that we ought to eat before we go back to wherever we're from?
Not anymore.
Really? Interesting.
Everybody comes here thinking deli food is the big thing.
Sure.
The problem is almost all of the quintessential delis have closed. Katz's is still open, and the pastrami sandwich there is, I think, the best I've ever had because they make it the old-fashioned way. I think it takes them about 18 days. They don't pressure cook it. They let it cook slow. Mm-hmm. Hot dogs, they're dirty water dogs. There's a reason they're called dirty water dogs. Bagels are great here because we have great water, and that's the trick to having great bread. So you should have a bagel and cream with a schmear, as they call it. So that means you don't get too much cream cheese, just a schmear of it. But other than that, I don't know if there's a quintessential New York food anymore. I mean, there's steak, but you many places in the U.S. you can get great steak. Quite honestly, this is going to sound weird, but we have a huge expat Japanese community here in New York, and you can try Japanese food that you won't try anywhere else in the United States. Things that are often just sold on the street in Japan, like octopus balls, which are kind of doughy balls with a Worcestershire sauce-like thing on top of it, dried bonito flakes and bits of octopus that are absolutely delicious. And there's another place where you get burgers, but they're not actually burgers. They're fish with buns made of rice pressed together. So really unusual Japanese food that you won't find elsewhere in the U.S.
Excellent. Well, we need to wrap this up before it becomes a two-part episode.
Yeah.
Before I get to my last three questions, anything else we should know before we go to New York?
If you're not a person who gets chilled too easily, come in January and February. That's when our hotel prices are at their lowest. That's when all the new Broadway shows are debuting. That's when often the museums are debuting their new shows. And so it's a very culturally rich and affordable time to come, but it can be chilly.
Excellent. Last three questions. One thing that makes you laugh and say, only in New York.
I guess a tourist on every single block. You just see so many thousands of people with maps. And I guess because it's my personal mission to make the rest of the world think that we're nice people, I always stop and ask, do you need any help? Do you know where you're going?
And do you introduce yourself when you do that?
Never.
I suspected you didn't.
No.
And I should say, do you count how many people are holding a Frommer's guide when you do that?
No, but the few times I've seen it, I've gone running up to them and said, I wrote that. Once I went up running up to a woman and said, that's my book. And she said, no, I bought this book. It's mine. And I said, no, I wrote it.
Finish this sentence. You really know you're in New York when what?
When you're eavesdropping on a person next to you and you realize you're sitting next to the most brilliant person in the world. And it happens all the time. As I said, I'm a big eavesdropper. And I just learn the most fascinating things when I listen in on other people's conversations. Just because we have so many insanely smart people here.
Excellent. And if you had to summarize the Big Apple, New York City, in just three words, what three words would you use?
Electric, friendly, and fun.
Excellent. And Pauline, first, before we talk about where else they can read about your travels, the name of the guidebook you just finished on New York?
My guidebook is called Frommer's Easy Guide to New York City 2015. And I'm telling you 2015 because the 2014 version is sold out, but people are still trying to buy it online. And I'm trying to push them to buy the 2015.
Well, and we did schedule this show. We waited until the 2015 book came out to get Pauline on so that we could have fresh information here. And where else can people read about your travels, Pauline?
Well, if you go to Frommers.com, I'm constantly blogging there. I also have an internationally syndicated newspaper column. And you can hear my father and I argue on the radio. We have a nationally syndicated program. I think people listen to it to hear us disagree. But it's great working with my father, both on the guidebooks and on the radio show and on the website.
Well, and for those people who don't know, who are outside the New York area, which is where the show is produced, you can listen to that as a podcast also. And congratulations, because it just won gold in the Lowell Thomas Award in the category that I won an honorable mention in. So one of the people who beat me was Pauline. And if you have to be beaten in a category being beaten by you and by your father, who's been doing this for quite a long time, he isn't too shabby.
Oh, well, thank you. That's very kind of you.
Our guest again has been Pauline Frommer, and thank you for sharing with us your love for New York City.
Thank you.
In news of the community, I heard from Chris Bogdan, who pointed out that we had just done a show on Slovakia and Poland back-to-back, and he said it was interesting that we did Poland back-to-back with Slovakia, because when the guest who was talking about Slovakia was talking about the Tatra Mountains in Slovakia, it was the same mountain range that he was talking about when he was talking about Zakopane on the Polish side. Chris, thanks for pointing that out. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, feel free to send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. You can also follow me on Twitter @Chris2X. And as always, thanks so much for listening.